welcome to the programme. Live to Bristol to a terrific journalist and broadcaster, my friend Tony Gosling. Welcome back, Tony. Hello, Tony. Are you there? Speak now or forever hold your peace. Have we got you? We don't. We'll have to take another tune in the meantime, then he's there. It does happen. And it does happen sometimes, you know. I'll get him to call me. We'll get Tony Gosling on. Here's Queen in the meantime while we clean this one up. Ooh, you make me live. Right, let's ixnay Freddie and the boys. Tony, welcome back. How are you?
That was a nice, quick tune.
Wasn't it? That was quick. That's proper quick. I'm so glad. I don't often have two or three in the player, but I did today for some reason. Thank God for that. Welcome back, my friend. What happened in Bristol last night, as far as you understand?
Well, yes, okay, so you've got something going on which is really anarchists. I suppose it's a mixture of various people. It's fascinating, isn't it? Because the government's biggest worst nightmare is that all these various protest groups which are springing up all start lining up against them.
Yeah.
How really would they go nuts? But last night you've got mainly travellers, squatters, anarchists, and Bristol's, you know, got a very large, in relatively speaking to most cities, anarchist contingent. People have basically, you know, been thrown over by society in one way or another, whether it's, you know, just through housing, lack of housing, that sort of thing. And it's, what happens is people develop a pretty radical point of view against the state, you know, when the state is making all these promises of various sorts, and then they find that they're just left up with nothing, no chance of a decent job, and no chance of housing, then this radicalizes people. So that's basically what, you know, and I would say those people are not, you know, something else. They are you and me. I was a squatter myself. I found myself without any housing back in the noughties for nearly 5 years, more like 4 years. And, you know, so I know where they're coming from. They are really angry about this police crime sentencing and courts bill. Priti Patel has put she's basically done loads of these Tory proposals and all squeezed them all into this one bill. And what it is really is it's a successor to and a far nastier version of the Criminal Justice Act that I remember very well from 1994. In fact, I went on the march in London against it, the Right to Party Act, you know, which was stopped the raves and criminalised loads of activities that people used to do back in the early 90s. And this is an attack, an absolutely square-faced blunderbuss attack on the travellers. Now, in Bristol, we've got lots and lots of people who live like that. That is, people live in vehicles. Now, some of them are in a vehicle because they're homeless. Others are in a vehicle because they work during the summer on the festival circuit, on the festival scene. And there hasn't been a festival circuit and a festival scene last year at all. There hasn't really been one this year. The city council has been taking out injunctions, even though it's supposed to be Labour, against these people, threatening them with up to 2 years in prison for basically just, you know, sleeping in a vehicle on the side, by the side of the road. As I mean, there is probably at least 2,000 or so people in Bristol that live like this, and so they are, you know, I think what's happened last night is that they're saying, well, if you're going to criminalize us, then we've got nothing to lose.
Yeah, problem is there are thousands of people there, and many of them have taken to, when they've been able to today, to the national and local airwaves to say that they smell a rat there. That the vast, vast majority of people were there to protest peacefully, had no intentions of getting involved in any scuffles with the police. And one or two have said, Tony, that this is classic police tactics or classic establishment tactics. Send in a few guys to cause a bit of bother so that can be filmed and photographed by the media and basically then obscure the real reason why people were there, which you've articulated brilliantly, by the way. But you're saying you do believe that these were genuine people.
There's a bit of both. And, you know, I've come across several times, you know, what usually a handful of agent provocateurs sent in there by the authorities. And it isn't necessarily the police doing this either. It can be landowner interests, people who actually want to see, you know, the headlines. Oh, isn't it terrible? The people are protesting against this bill. There are some people that want that. But I think the vast majority are genuine, basically now haters of the police. And the reason that they're hating the police is not because they don't want to call them if, you know, something happens to them or one of their friends is injured or attacked or whatever, or whatever. It's because they are now being criminalised. Now, this new police crime sentencing courts bill, they call it kill the bill, don't they?
Yeah.
That was the actual thing. That is exactly the same term which was used in the 1990s
at
the Criminal Justice Act that finally became the Criminal Justice Act. That was a kill the bill demonstration. And they're not, you know, they're, what should we say, cheeky, witty anarchists that like using these kinds of terms. Obviously the old bill as well. They're being cheeky and they're being satirical when they're saying this. But at the end of the day, if they are going to be criminalised themselves, I don't think that they've got much of an option than to fight back. Some people are definitely, I think, are sent into these things to deliberately cause trouble. But then there is a genuine contingent of people who just see no other option than to fight back in one way or another. And I would use the analogy, actually, to the IRA in Northern Ireland, where you had the situation there where there was horrific civil rights discrimination going on against the Catholics. Then there was Bloody Sunday to rub salt in the wounds. And, you know, the idea that you're not going to actually fight back is out of the window. I think there's enough people, you know, certainly I've come across over the years who I would totally disagree with their tactics, Richie. It's not my way. It's not my way of doing things. But you can see that there are people who, if you imagine, if you've spent the last 4 or 5 years living, say, just, for example, living in a vehicle, you've been doing your festivals and things like that, and you're now being told that if you park up at the side of the road, that the police can arrest you as a criminal and impound your vehicle indefinitely, and that you may have to go to jail for just being. This is the sort of thing that does get people angry. And you know what? I think they are doing their best to do things. Many of them are doing things through the right channels and, you know, doing, you know, what you would say is through a peaceful means. But there's enough of an anarchist style contingent that are genuinely angry, and they see this as an attempt to rub them out. And so that's why there's been, I think, this backlash. Remember, of course, Bristol is probably the main centre in the country for the travelling community, the people that sort of service the festivals. They do all sorts at these festivals, selling clothes, they go bars, they do the entertainments and all that sort of thing. And they're up against it already without having very little income over the last 18 months or so. And now they're being told, well, we're actually just going to wipe you out. Now, it's no exaggeration to say this is the sort of thing that was going on in the mid-1930s. In Nazi Germany with the travellers and the gypsies, of which I think the official figures are around 30,000 went to the concentration camps in Germany. We are not going to live. I don't want to live in a country where somebody cannot park up in a piece of land that's not been used for 20 years or out the back of an empty building that's not been used for 10 years. We've got loads of those around, I can tell you. And they're going to be put in jail for that.
Are you really
going to do that? And I think that's really what's going on here. This is a provocation, really, by Priti Patel, the Home Secretary.
It's going to pass, though, Tony, isn't it? This bill is going to pass, and on Thursday...
Not necessarily. Look, we just had last week a whole bunch of MPs writing to Priti Patel, saying they've got serious worries about some of the clauses in this bill. So remember, we've got the first reading and second reading, and then after that it gets to the Royal Assent. And so there is going to be more discussion about this in Parliament. And I was reading this morning, I'm not sure if it was, am 100% accurate on this, but that they're actually putting off the second reading of this bill in order to make sure that the opposition parties, because Keir Starmer and his Labour lot have only just last week changed their mind about beginning to oppose it. Would you believe?
That's right.
So I think they're sending a very, very clear message saying, well, look, if you really want to pass this legislation, then you're going to have potentially a kind of civil war in this country. We've got tens of thousands of people living like this. And if you're going to try and criminalise them all, then they're not going to go take it lying down.
No. Before we move on from this, civil disobedience has never been tried in this country. And you talked about these guys that are fed up. They're so fed up that they see their only route to getting some sort of satisfaction is to put it up to the police and to get physical with them. Some of them, not all of them. But that's a means to an end. That's never going to achieve anything. Not in my opinion anyway. Civil disobedience has never been tried here, has it? In this country. Not in large enough groups.
Well, it has in Bristol, I can tell you. But the end of the 1800s, they burnt down one of the biggest areas. Well, it's one of the poshest Regency squares, Queen's Square, in the city. Well,
that's direct action, isn't it?
And this is, I would consider that civil disobedience. I don't think we saw any of that last night. I mean, it's always important to add, which sometimes the mass media doesn't do, that the vast majority of the people out in marching, protesting against this bill yesterday, were peaceful. That was, you know, there was, I would say, something like 3,000 or 4,000 people out, people like you and me out. And then what happens though? The anarchists always come out when it gets dark, as soon as the sun goes down, you know, and the night planet comes up above the horizon, out comes the anarchists, you know, that's when they start. A lot of the stuff that you've seen in the pictures was, you know, basically just fireworks. You know, that's not a very sensible thing to fire at a policeman, but it's not necessarily as dangerous as some of the things that they could have been doing. And the whole thing, I think, is done for a bit of shock and awe as well. So make sure that they, you know, that this sends a very strong signal to the country that this is not going to be some, you know, sort of little kumbaya picnic here, that we're going to take on the state. They are taking on the state because the state is taking them on.
Yeah, but the problem is, before we move on and talk about coronavirus and the extension of the Coronavirus Act and the powers until October, the problem is it plays right into the hands of the establishment and the establishment media, because they show these photographs and images on television, on breakfast TV, they speak about them on breakfast radio, and it kind of scares the rest. Well, not scares, but it certainly gives a perspective, doesn't it, to the rest of the populace. The rest of the nation says, oh, that's a bit scary, they're a bit scummy, they're a bit thuggish, and you know, like you said, there were thousands and thousands of other people there, not violent, and that just gets lost. But anyway, look, we could be here all day talking about that.
Well, I think it does to a certain extent. But look, I mean, you look at the Northern Ireland Troubles, what actually got the people sitting talking around the table and got it all sorted out, I think anyway, was the massive bomb at Canary Wharf. Now, there was a proper warning given, which was passed on by the police or by the media, and so the buildings were evacuated. But that bomb made a lot of financial damage to the City of London. And all of a sudden you found, oh, right, well, we wanted to talk, and it was calmed down by that. Now, I'm not saying that's the only way to do it. And, of course, this shows how irresponsible a lot of our governments are. They want to just push it and push it because there's no direct effect on them. But when you get something which is going to cost the state a lot of money, it's going to cost insurance for big companies, that sort of thing. And nobody, actually, the only person I think who was physically injured in that bomb attack in the late 90s, I think, it was in the mid 90s, wasn't it? Was a Daily Express cameraman. And he was told by the police, don't go anywhere near that lorry, it's about to explode. And he went right over next to the lorry and was killed when it did explode. So there were no other casualties. And it was just a lot of glass and a lot of financial damage. And once these big firms' insurance values go through the roof, then they're saying, well, come on, government, we need to get an agreement in Northern Ireland. And so I think there is a part to that, these sorts of, you know, I don't know whether you would call that violence, non-violence. You're not actually having a go at a person. You're having a go at property, and you're saying, if you want to continue this war with us, we are going to cost you financially.
Yeah, I don't agree with it. I'm an Irish Republican. I don't agree with that. I'm not saying I don't agree with you. I think you've summed up the tactics very well, but I don't agree with it. I mean, in the same year, 1996, they blew up a bomb in the centre of Manchester and did unbelievable damage. And it's not really the establishment that suffers when you do something like that. It's small businessmen and women who suffer when something like that happens. That's just my opinion. You know, I've had Republican friends over the years.
Well, I think it was when they decided to do it to the City of London. And I think actually the City of London, with its little red dragon everywhere, is the belly of the beast. So that was when I think that was some tactics changed. But I mean, this is just one thing. And I would hope to God that the Home Office, because Priti Patel, by the way, is, you know, she's in favour of the death penalty. She was booted out in November 2017 by Theresa May for lying about having all these secret meetings with the Israelis.
Treason, we call that treason. Huh? Treason, we call that, Tony. She was International Development Secretary. She took a holiday and went to Tel Aviv and spent time with, as you said, with Israeli cabinet ministers and neglected to inform her party leader. That's treason. Any way you paint that is treacherous, yeah.
So they're going to have to get rid of this woman. I don't know how, yeah. You know, but it's her is the problem. You know, it's not the anarchists in Bristol. Aren't they terrible? They are doing what I think they have to do if they are feeling that they're about to be criminalized just for being, you know, you are criminalized and they're going to be locked up, are they? Just for having a horse and cart by the side of the road or a gypsy caravan by the side of the road? This is just, you know, it's not on. And also, of course, the right to protest in this bill being stopped in the way it is. You can only do a protest between certain times and certain times. You can't use a loudhailer, you know, or a megaphone. Yeah, otherwise you're going to be arrested. Yeah. You know, all this stuff is police state material. Yeah. And I think there's no clearer example of why the lockdown is being used as an excuse to move towards a police state than seeing that incredible breakup of that vigil two Saturdays ago by the police, which is being held in memory of a woman, Sarah Everard, who has been, it looks like, allegedly anyway, murdered by a serving diplomatic and royal protection officer. What on earth? And the police decide they're going to go in and smash up a vigil. Do you think those police are actually helping to stop the spread of coronavirus by going and beating up some of these women?
I don't understand what happened there. And you hear about, I don't know. The vigil was obviously a genuine thing, but the police response, they can't be that stupid. The police, you wonder about the motivation of the police and what's really going on there. I don't know that, but I want to move on though, because it's already 23 minutes.
The motivation is important. I think we can use a bit of educated guesswork.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's going on here with Priti Patel? I don't think this is Sadiq Khan or Chrisida Dick. I think this is the Home Secretary. And I think she is so naive that she thinks we need to send a message out that nobody should dare to come out in public and demonstrate.
She's not that stupid, is she?
That's what she tried to do.
She might have done. I don't know that she didn't do that, but it strikes me as rank stupidity. I don't understand why she couldn't have foreseen what would happen, but it's an interesting theory,
I'm not dismissing that. They're totally out of touch, a lot of these people. They're living in an ivory tower, completely out of touch with the ordinary man and woman in the street. Totally.
That's fair enough. Thursday, the Prime Minister is going to ask Parliament to extend coronavirus powers, well, the powers to impose restrictions to protect everybody against coronavirus until October, September 25th, in fact. Now, whereas the crime and policing bill does have a lot of stumbling blocks, as you eloquently explained a few minutes ago, this is going through. Whatever Steve Baker, whatever the 1922 committee say, this is going to get through because Labour and the Lib Dems will support it. Now, before you come back in, I want to remind our listeners, they're bragging that more than half the adults in the country have received a coronavirus vaccine. They are bragging that every so-called very vulnerable person has had a vaccine. Case numbers are nothing to talk about at all. Death numbers. But there's no sign of lockdown ending. Yesterday, Sunday, Sage members were taken to the national airwaves yesterday to say that some of these restrictions, like wearing masks and social distancing, will be with us for many, many years to come. Lockdowns are never going away, are they, T? What's going on?
Well, a lockdown went away for me a long, long time ago. I don't think I've taken any notice of any of these lockdowns at all. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that.
You are.
Because I just don't have any belief in it. And of course, the longer they try and stretch this out, the fewer and fewer are going to be the tiny little number of people, standing in the corner of the room who still believe in this. And you have to be extremely credulous to believe that what is basically the same kind of disease as the flu, this coronavirus, that usually will take about 2 months to go through the population and then come out the other side is still going and still there. I don't believe it is. It was recently looking at one of the stats from some local hospitals in Bristol. There was nobody whatsoever in the hospital. And this was a hospital which had been singled out for coronavirus patients. Not a single person actually had coronavirus. So they love the power. They love the power. And the other thing is they are planning a war. And the reason I say that they are planning a war is because I've been looking at what happened last week with the Russian ambassador being withdrawn from Washington the first time ever. I don't know actually if it was like pre-World War II there was a Russian ambassador that was withdrawn. I'm not sure. But certainly not even during the Cold War, not even during the Cuban Missile Crisis did the Russians withdraw their ambassador to Washington. And they did that last week and there was hardly any reporting of it at all. What's happening is we are being we are being nudged inch by inch, ratcheted towards a war with the Russians and the Chinese, and this is not being reported, and they're embarrassed about these various steps. Now, the Russians have quite rightly, in my mind, have actually withdrawn their ambassador because they've had enough of all this rhetoric, which is basically the Americans pulling out of every decent, sensible treaty. The Americans coming up with some tinpot excuse, pulling out of the treaty, pulling out of all sorts of international organizations. But the treaties, the nuclear treaties, for example, the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, things like this, that they're pulling out of. They're making problems over the New START Treaty, things like that. And they're saying basically that there isn't any point in sitting down with you anymore because we know that you're not actually wanting to make deals. So even if we sit down for weeks and weeks and months to try and make a deal, what's happening is you either won't sign that deal or you'll break the deal as soon as you've signed it. And so they're saying Putin's little phrase for what he says to the Americans is they're not deal ready. You can't do deals with these people. So, and that should send a very, very clear sign to Britain and to the rest of the world of what the Americans are doing to destroy detente and the peace that's been built up, admittedly through mutually assured destruction of nuclear weapons.
Can I put a spanner? Can I put a spanner into your theory?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Well, it might not be a spanner. You might very well be right. No, it's just another theory. I think it could be argued also. I mean, it's a good argument you make. I think it could also be argued that this nonsense about Russia, these tall stories that the Americans and the British spin about Russia and Russian intentions, maybe those are more about the sort of technocratic dystopian prison planet that they want to create for us, T. You know, that I can understand why you, and you might be right, Paul Craig Roberts and others have been on this program in the past. And of course, Paul had a very serious position in Ronald Reagan's administration. They go along with you that they're pushing for war, Gerald Celente. They're pushing for war. But I wonder if they're not, if what they're doing is trying to scare the living bejesus out of everybody into accepting even more draconian and dystopian ways of living and surveillance on us, you know?
Well, I think you may well be right, but they're moving us towards the edge of the cliff, aren't they? And why would we want to live on the edge of the cliff? No, thank you. We don't really want to live on the edge of the cliff. The thing is, I think what you're basically dealing with here is a greedy elite who have completely, basically gangster elite in the West that have taken over the levers of power through the banking system mainly, but also obviously the treacherous mainstream media. And they've done this, but they're not able to compete with China. Okay, so I'm no fan of China, but my goodness, they can produce stuff cheaply and they're very, very good innovators in terms of, you know, the technology, all this like 5G and all the rest. They're able to do everything that the West can do as good, if not better, and cheaper. And so they've been beaten economically. The Americans and the West have been beaten by the Chinese. The other thing that they do in China, by the way, is they make sure all the basic living costs are very low over there. So, you know, rent on a flat, electricity, you know, even the banking system is still nationalized over there. So you're paying basically, travel, transport, you're paying if you can actually get a ticket, if your social credit score is high enough, train. You know, it's cheap as chips to get around. Now, what they've done over here is to all their mates in the West, they've farmed out all these utilities, I would call them, transport, you know, electricity, gas, water, all that stuff, to their mates. And their mates are just raking it in. It's a racket. Traveling around Britain is a racket on the train. You know, anything you're doing basically here is a racket. Yeah. And so the Chinese are able to produce stuff much, much more cheaply because they haven't got all these massive, as people here have got overheads. The rents and the mortgages and the house prices over here, that is sucking a massive, massive amount of people's income. And so they need to be paid more to do anything. So the Chinese have made an absolute successful model in the new form of industrialism.
Well, it's a great point.
Have either been killed off or died. So they can't compete in that way. So the Americans, off. I think, are just bad losers.
Yes.
They're bad losers.
Killed off. There's a great historic question. And as an old genuine socialist. I can answer it, but it's going to take too long to do it here. Why governments in the West allowed Chinese manufacturers to undercut national manufacturers in their own countries, and the fallout from that and how that impacted on the working classes in this country and in Ireland. That's another story. But I did want to get into something that's very, very big and very prescient, T. That's a big word for me. I had to look it up. Prescient. I looked it up today. And that is, the Times had an exclusive today. I nicked it from my own website. Always give credit. Always give credit. And that is, the government is not considering, it will ask people like you and me, in fact, every adult in the country, to submit ourselves to 2 homemade coronavirus tests a week as a means of getting out of lockdown earlier. Now, you laugh at this, but this is serious. They're planning on doing this. They're going to launch a national advertising campaign. You speak of social crediting, right? You speak of social crediting. A national advertising campaign to basically say, ask not what the UK can do for you, but what you can do for the UK. Have your coronavirus test. Be a good citizen. Let us know that you're not unwell. Tyranny is what it is.
Well, it's a joke from as far as I'm concerned. Look, what are they going to do? Are they going to put a sort of whirlpool on the television and try and persuade everyone to do it that way? I mean, you know, the Brits, I think obviously some people will go along with all this. They do believe it. It's like a religion, you know, to some people. But increasingly people are, I think, I mean, people that I meet, just general people around. I mean, I was just chatting to a woman the other day who's lost her father-in-law through all this. You know, he goes into hospital and they never see him again. And it was completely unnecessary, actually. And he went down as a COVID death, even though he doesn't die as COVID. People are getting, almost everyone has been touched in some way by this whole business. Of course, you know, we've all been locked down as well. And I think the scales are falling from people's eyes, Richie. The more they pile on the propaganda, I think the more people are waking up to the fact that it's a load of nonsense. And the idea that they can actually get people to do all these, you know, nose swabs or whatever it is they want people to do, you know, it's not going to work. I just don't think it's feasible. George Orwell, he left his job at the BBC World Service back in the Second World War, just before the Second World War. He said, the propaganda, the thing is, guys, your propaganda doesn't work. You believe it works, but it doesn't. And, you know, it relies on people believing it. And to a certain extent, of course, he's absolutely right. A lot of people will, but it's a bit like, I suppose, natural selection in a cruel way to look at it.
But maybe it doesn't matter to you. Hang on. Maybe it doesn't matter whether people believe it or not. And I say that because you make life miserable enough for people. They'll have it. They'll have the vaccine that they don't need, and they might do the testing. I hear you loud and clear. I like to believe also that more men and women in this country are engaging their brains and looking around them and seeing that this is nonsense. However, they can't change. What they can't change is these restrictions, is these measures, is the push for the vaccine. And I'm hearing from people.
What restrictions?
Well, you can't open your business.
Most of them are in people's minds.
Well, you can't open your business. It's not in people's minds, T.
I'm afraid they are. We have to disagree on this. I went to one of these demonstrations in Gloucestershire, and the police all turned up. We're going to shut this demonstration down. There was about 4 or 5 riot vans and a very angry-looking police inspector. And the woman who'd organised it, she wasn't an organiser. She was one of the speakers. She'd taken the trouble as a politics lecturer to go and actually print out a copy of these coronavirus rules, and she sat down on a tree stump with a police inspector, went through the rules with a red pen, said, look at this, and you know what, the police inspector went over to one of these other people, and all the police except about 5 or 6 got in the vans and drove off.
Right.
And she was pointing out that it was perfectly legal within the rules, blah, 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 if you look at it in this way. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of intimidation here going on, and a lot of barrack room lawyers within the police force themselves. And I've heard anecdotally from quite a lot of people that that once they've challenged any of these rules in court, that they've got nowhere. I think this is largely a media-led thing. And the background to all of it, Richie, is the whole, you know, ramping up attention between the United States and China. By the way, the Americans making all the running in that. And I don't know if you've seen that the two Canadians, the two Mikes who were arrested in China after Meng Wanzhou was arrested. And she's one of the, this is how it all started, really. It was the Huawei's assistant chief financial officer, or assistant president and chief, assistant chair and chief financial officer, Meng Wanzhou, was arrested at Vancouver airport, and she's still in detention for nothing, because the Americans put out an arrest warrant for her. And then these two Canadians were arrested over in China. Now, this is what's kind of kicked this whole thing off. And if you, they were to just arrest this woman who's not done anything wrong at all the tension would go. But then they won't. I don't think they will, because they actually love the tension. They love the idea that they're in control and they're in power, because they're a bunch of freaks, control freaks.
They're certainly control freaks. 8 minutes to the top of the hour. Thanks for coming back, T. Just before we part company today, I mean, you still hold out some hope that this is not going to progress the way they want it to progress. You still see a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of...
I do. I definitely
people
do.
Might Look, eventually stand
they're
up
they're still
it.
On curfew in Holland, for God's sake. Yeah. You know, we haven't had any of that here. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I think most of the police, the ordinary cops can see this for exactly what it
the
is.
The rank and file.
And they are not necessarily going to be intervening and fining people. If people have got a bit of a bad attitude, then they may well do that. But the last thing they want to do is to be chasing everybody around, a builder that's going to his work.
No, but they've done it, though. They've bloody well done it for the last 12 months, Steve. What are you talking about? There was a grandmother sitting in her garden with her next-door neighbour, Summer, the other day, even reported by the BBC, and a copper went in there and told them to sling their hooks, get back into their houses. This is the thing. The police seem to be fairly happy to go and annoy people. We saw people having sex in a car somewhere in the Peak District, minding their own business, a couple. You don't know, how the hell did a Bobby go up there? Some police officer went up there, banged on the window, and fined them 200 quid each. I love your optimism, but I see police officers all too willing to be authoritarian and to hand down petty fines for nothing. That's
yeah,
what I see.
Some of them are. Yeah, and those ones, and I think a lot of this stuff is specifically done for to go on the television. You know, there is a lot of lots Maybe. Of this is put on TV. I can remember seeing, you know, there's a whole thing about, you know, we're waiting for you. The Welsh police up on a mountain pass on the Welsh borders, and someone's driving along,
yeah.
And the police pounce on them. This is just for the stupid people, Richie. This is just propaganda, television propaganda. You know, there's lots of that going on. And you know, I would suggest what goes on there is that somebody somewhere has a word with the chief constable and says, oh, we want some nice pictures of the police looking scary. Most ordinary police officers are not interested in this sort of thing. They're there to actually clear up crime of various sorts. Obviously, you know, when they're ordered from neighbouring forces to protect Bridewell Police Station in the centre of Bristol, yesterday, they will do that too, and they'll get paid some very nice overtime for it as well. But they, I think, also will be sending the message back very clearly that we do not want to have some sort of massive confrontation with, you know, thousands of people, in fact, tens of thousands across the country, turning everybody, all these people into criminals and trying to lock them up. You know, that will be a part of the message that is going back today, I would imagine.
T, thanks as usual. Thisweek.org.uk, The Politics Show, live from Bristol, Fridays. Tony Gosling, Bristolian honorary. By birth, aren't you, T? You were born in Bristol, weren't you? I think you were.
South London.
Ah, you're a London boy. Yeah, yeah, you decamped to Bristol, that's right.
It's a little bit less hectic. And also, the other lovely thing about Bristol is, I mean, I found London is just, it's like the belly of the beast, man, really is. And you get all these people going into the city of London on the trains every morning, you know, and they look like death. And then when they come out of the building, they look like they've had some sort of a blood transfusion taken out of them. I mean, they look even worse when they're heading home, you know. But Bristol is much more sort of it's a traditional, I suppose, you know, medieval city, and I've certainly been able, I think anyway, to get my head around the way it works and the power players, etc., which is something I could never manage to do in such a massive city, an important international city as London. So I love Bristol. I love that part of the country. You know, we've got the Brecon Beacons very close by, the Quantock Hills, the Cotswolds. You know, almost everywhere you go, it's gorgeous around there. So, you know, that's why I'm in Bristol.
Brilliant, mate. Thanks again. Thisweek.org.uk. You've been listening to Tony Gosling live on Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show. Cheers, T. Thanks for that.